Hey everybody, just a quick word before we start this week's episode. We are now the proud sponsors of Timber Outdoor Music Festival. It's a brand new music festival presented by Artists Home, co-creators of Dobe Fest. It's going to be good. Timber attendees will enjoy the likes of the Helio Sequence, Fruit Bats, Quasi, Noah Gunderson, Brian John Appleby, Lamolo, and many more. Many who have been on this very show. And it's going to be so much fun, guys. It's going to be 2 days and nights of camping, outdoors, and music in Carnation, Washington. Timber is going to take place July 26th and 27th. You can find out more at timbermusicfest.com. Enjoy the episode. Hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 151 in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden. And this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Boom, indeed. Man. Oh, man. What a week. What a week, everybody. We've got a great show planned for you this week. The wonderful, wonderful human being, Chris Ballou, lead singer. I don't even know if you'd call it, it's like a bass tar. I don't know what he calls it. Lead singer of the Presidents of the United States of America will be sitting down with me here in the dining room studios shortly. Also, he has this project called Casper Baby Pants, where he makes children's music, and we talk a bit about that as well. Very, very good conversation, by the way. Holy smokes. Holy smokes. I can't wait for you guys to hear this, because Chris Ballou is a very, very nice man. And he's a great talker, and he shares some good stories. And some pretty heartfelt opinions on how the presidents, or PUSA, came to an end there for a little bit, and it's a really interesting story. So stick around for the whole thing, please. But first, of course, we're gonna chat a little bit about what's been going on here in the Roden household. Man, I'll tell you what. This may go, what's going on in my life right now may go onto the top 10 list of the most annoying things to do while having a 2-year-old child. And of course, I'm talking about selling a house. Selling a house is possibly one of the most annoying things. If it's not in the top 10, it's in, you know, the top 15. Most annoying things to have to be doing I am just having a lot of trouble getting my words out today. I'm sorry. I am tired because selling my house, man, it's totally taking all of my energy and throwing it in the garbage. That's where it's going because we have to. Oh my God, how do I even start this tale? It's a trying time right now in the Roden household. We have to get up, pick up everything, you know, before we leave for work every morning with a 2-year-old. That's you know, it's very difficult. It's very difficult, you guys. Cleaning up everything, making sure everything looks great. So if somebody comes and checks out the place during the day while we're gone, everything looks awesome. And they can see themselves living in that space, right? And then, of course, you get home. All you want to do is just sit on the couch, you know, with your kid, just hang out, maybe go to the park or anything. But then you get 5 or 6 phone calls saying, hey, we're going to come and check out your place at 6 o'clock. Daughter goes to bed at 7:30. That's not going to work. We got to eat dinner. Where are we going to eat dinner? We eat out. That's what happens. I've been eating out so much lately because people are coming and checking out the place at like dinner time. On weekdays, and it sucks. totally sucks. But we got an offer. We got our first offer on the place. So hopefully that goes through. I'm keeping my fingers crossed. We can start, getting a better studio space for this here podcast, and also get some outdoor space for my daughter, and prepare to make this family bigger. We're gonna have 7 children. We're gonna have 7 kids, and they're all gonna be put to work. That's my plan. They're all gonna build the empire that is Air Raid, right? Yeah. Hey, speaking of kids, I got this one thing to share with you guys before we go to our first musical break. I met this great person a couple weeks ago. Her name is Kate Schruth, and she gave me this book called The Animal Builder. And it's a kid's book, of course, and it is so good. The art is great, and the story is a lot of fun, and my daughter just loves the book. She loves all the pictures. It's all this, like cutout, paper cutout art. I know you guys know what I'm talking about. It's kind of like South Park, but, artsy. It's called The Animal Builder. It's about a giant space anteater. And, anteater from outer space. Giant anteater from outer space. And he builds animals. And it's such a good book. And I can't say enough good things about it. So go to her website, katetruth.com. And that is spelled Kate, KateSchruth.com. Go check it out. Check out the book. It's got some art up there. If you have small kids, I think they will really, really like it. So there you go. Let's do this, shall we? Oh, get on. Get on with it. Get to this amazing, amazing chat with Mr. Chris Ballew. And of course, remember, you can go to air-raid.net, go to the archives page, and check out all of the past episodes with people like Macklemore, comedians like Pete Holmes, musicians like John Roderick, Grand Archives, Pickwick, all sorts of great stuff there at air-raid.net, air-raid.net, including, Bob Saget, Dana Gould, man. A lot of good stuff, guys. Sean Nelson, do that. All right. This is called Peaches, and you know this song. President of the United States of America. And we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears.
I'm gonna eat a lot of peaches. Move into the country. I'm gonna eat a lot of peaches. Move into the country. Gonna eat a lot of peaches. Move into the country. Gonna eat a lot of peaches. I took a little nap with a loose old twist. Squished a rotten peach in my fist. And dreamed about you, a woman.
Hello and welcome back, everybody. That was Peaches by the Presidents of the United States of America, also known as PUSA, right?
Yeah, that's okay. You can PUSA? Call it whatever you want. The President's PUSA, Pot USA, the Presidents of the United States of America, all that stuff.
It's kind of like the longest band name in the history of band names,
yeah,
right?
I think so. How many is it? The Presidents of the United States of America. 15. 15 syllables. We win.
That's great. That's great. Well, wait.
Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. That's only nine.
Yeah, that's only nine, man. You beat them out.
Yeah, beat them by six.
Yeah. Are you guys in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame yet for most syllables in a band name? That's got to be a category.
I don't think that's a category. Last time I looked about 20 minutes ago.
Did you?
Just to check. You never know if they're going to expand.
Just keeping up with it. Chris Ballew in the dining room studios, which, by the way, will be changing hands, hopefully, sometime soon. Yeah. We're getting rid of this place. Have you ever sold a place before? You
have to. Yes. Actually,
it is a pain in the ass, man.
The first house I bought, actually, I got divorced and my wife kept that house, and so she took care of selling it.
Okay.
And then
okay.
I bought some other houses. I bought a bunch of houses, but I don't think I've ever sold one.
Really?
I've never sold one. Yeah.
Are you a real estate mogul? Do you rent out?
I've got
things?
A rental in Ballard, and my wife has a rental in Laurelhurst, and then we have a house in West Seattle and a little shack on Vashon. So we have four properties.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is it hard to kind of keep that all straight? I've been worried about we've tossed it around like maybe we would rent this place out.
Oh yeah,
but I don't know. I don't know if I want the headache, a rental
agency to take care of all the details, and there's no headache really. There's just every so often a check comes through your mail slot.
Yeah,
yeah, it's beautiful.
But do they have to come and do you guys have to do the repairs though?
No, the
rental agency does.
Yeah,
that?
Yeah. Property management. Look into it.
No way.
Yeah. It's great.
This is changing my whole day.
We're going to talk about property management for the next 50 minutes. Stay tuned. This is Air Raid.
That's right. You didn't know we were going to talk about this.
That's right.
Well,
sorry,
welcome, man.
No music.
Well, welcome, sir. Thank you so much for making it out. This has been kind of a long time in the making here.
Yes, I know. I had to reschedule with you last time. I think I was sick. Because I'm currently still getting
over
being sick.
Right, but we were talking like last year too about getting you on, and it just wasn't working out. Because I think you were going back on tour with the Presidents, right?
Yeah, of sorts. I mean, on tour. You know, we're always kind of going out, coming back, going out, coming back. Yeah. Lots.
Well, we were talking a little bit before we started recording. You guys, how recent was the most recent tour?
Oh, just West Coast. What, a week, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah,
something like that.
How'd it go?
Last week of May, it was great.
Yeah.
Really fantastic. I mean, we got great crowds showing up, lots of love. The band is playing best. I mean, we're playing better than we played in a long time together.
Really?
Things are like tight and bouncy and fun and loose and unpredictable, and we're making up new songs, and somehow we have this like extra bit of wind in our sails.
Why is that?
I don't know. I don't know. If I knew, I'd bottle it and I'd sell it. I don't know. No, I don't know. It's just we kind of feel loose because I think we're finally coming around full circle to where we're not trying to impress anybody but ourselves.
Yeah, yeah.
And so after starting out that way and then getting sort of derailed by the machinery of success and the pressure there and all the extra kind of responsibilities that come along with it. You know, we're not just hanging out all day, having barbecues, drinking beer, and playing music in the evenings. Now we're like in charge of a multinational corporation, and we have publishing deals, and we have meetings.
Right,
and
right.
All of a sudden, everything that made life happy is gone. And so now we're back to life being happy.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So we have something to sing about.
That's good, man.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that. And the fans are still out there, and they're still coming and making it a rockin' show.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of love.
That's
a lot
fantastic.
Of love. The other night we played, I think it was, where were we? I think we were in Costa Mesa maybe or somewhere like that. And we're doing this thing where we do the entire debut album.
Uh-huh.
And we stop in between sides and say, okay, that was side one and now here's side two. Because people don't remember sides. And this crowd just erupted into a spontaneous love applause, and you know, we didn't do anything, we just stood there and they just applauded for like 2 minutes.
What?
Just screamed at us like, we love you. And that was amazing. That had never and that had never happened. You know, one thing that happened was back in the old days, I think when we had our first burst of success, Our crowd was a lot of people who were curious but weren't necessarily fans, or they'd seen us on TV and they didn't want to miss the boat. And so there was this kind of, we're here and we're part of the thing, but we're not really, we didn't have a love connection with the majority of those crowds.
Well, I wanted to ask you something about that too, because coming up in Seattle, when you guys kind of started and broke onto the, I don't know what you would call it, the alternative music scene or whatever.
Yeah.
Here in town. Like, you know, bands were very serious about what they did, or they seemed, from an outsider's perspective, it was very serious. Grunge was serious. Like, it wasn't cool to be invested in something, right? It wasn't cool to be happy.
Yeah, I
and
guess
you guys kind of burst onto the scene, and you were happy, it seemed like it.
And we
and
weren't
you were having,
cool.
You weren't cool.
No. I think that was our power.
You were secretly cool, though.
Our power
was... Because everybody loved the shit out of you, they didn't want to say it.
We were warm. We weren't cool. We were warm.
You were warm?
Yeah. That's the opposite of cool.
Like, you felt like you could come up and give you guys a hug or something.
Yeah, we were warm. Cool, cold, all that stuff is a little, like, aloof. We were not aloof. We were totally accessible.
So what did that feel like, though? I mean, were you getting a good... When you guys first, like, came on to the... to the Seattle scene.
It felt great. It felt like inevitable. It felt like, inevitable in that we were just doing what we were doing without any sort of preconceptions or compromise or plan. We just did exactly what we did to please ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the theory was, if we could please ourselves, we're humans, so other humans will probably like it too. So,
yeah, yeah.
And our rule was, we don't look down at the set list and play... If one member of the band looks at the set list and says, you know what, song number 7, I'm not super excited to play, and the other two people are, we just got rid of it.
Yeah.
Because the idea was that we had to all look down at the set list and go, oh my God, I can't wait to play all of those songs.
Right, right.
And that was our sort of credo or democratic process. And I think our excitement, because we were excited about every single song, our excitement was infectious.
Yeah.
And people wanted to be near us because we
transferred through the music and transferred to the people listening.
I guess
to
so.
It.
Yeah. We were happy.
Yeah. You seem like a happy person.
I'm happy now. Yeah.
Yeah. Were you not happy for a while?
I was very unhappy for a while.
Why? Just all the pressure of being and doing the.
Oh, just kind of, you know. What I'm doing with kids' music now is kind of what I was built to do with my life. The Presidents is a great thing, and I super love it, and I very much respect what we've achieved.
But probably paid some bills, too.
The entire time we were doing it, I had a voice in the back of my head saying, this isn't it. Keep going. Keep going. Don't stop. Yeah. This isn't it. Even though this is amazing, this isn't it. And I couldn't reconcile that gut feeling with what was happening around me.
Uh-huh.
So it was really disorienting. I was like, do I really need to trash this to find something else? And my gut instinct kept saying, yep, you got to trash it. You got to move on.
Uh-huh.
And I did, and didn't find it right away. But years and years later, found this thing I'm doing as Casper Baby Pants. And that is, I mean, that's what I'm going to do for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
So that's like, there's my destination. There's my home. Now, again, that doesn't mean that I don't love and respect and totally just enjoy the Presidents, especially now that I have it solved.
Right.
But back when I had that voice telling me, like, this isn't it, I didn't have a resolution with that. And so I kind of vilified the Presidents in my mind, like, this is a distraction. I need to stop and find this other thing, but I couldn't do it. And this machinery was humming away, and like another record and videos and touring. And, I was going to be the jerk if I jumped off, because the whole thing would fall apart and it would affect a whole bunch of people. And so I let that fester for a couple of years, and then I finally just went to a band meeting and said, first order of business, I quit. Which
was
not
a
great way to do it.
What year was that?
I regret that. That was 97.
Really?
Late in 97.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did that create some bad blood between the other two guys?
Everything was kind of out of control for all of us in different ways.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was just, you know, it's just what happened. It was the same reason Soundgarden broke up. The Chris quit.
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah.
You got a Chris that doesn't
want
to be
Chris in the band.
You got a Chris in the band. Don't have a Chris in your band and you'll be fine. I got to clear my throat. Hold on. There we go.
We're both a little sick. So
I'm not sick anymore. I just have this darn little frog in my throat.
Right, right. It's just still kind of in
the
chest area.
Yeah, the chest area.
Yeah, totally. So let's go back a little bit, because I get the impression that you have always been into music.
No, I hate music. I only do this for the money.
Yes. That you, maybe your parents were into music as well?
Yeah.
Is that a fair assumption?
Yep.
And because I don't know, somebody who, you know, gets into the music business and has been doing it as long as you probably wouldn't be doing it unless there was some sort of addiction level.
Well, the reaction I was talking about how like a life well lived is the essential activity of living. Like just,
right.
You know, for me, just like getting up in the morning, hanging out with my wife all day, making art and music, seeing my friends, seeing my family, doing random things unscheduled, like, hey, let's go kayak, get the kayak and put it in the water right now. Having that be how I live my life is number one. And then music sort of comes out of that. Music is like this kind of echo of that activity. Like if I don't have that activity, the songs don't work. It doesn't work, as evidenced by the president stuff we tried to do once the machinery was rolling. We were busy and we were touring, and the songs, I mean, they're great and everything, but they didn't have that kind of like spark that brought them to life like the debut record had.
Yeah, yeah. Because,
again, that grew out of a life well lived. So I'm addicted to a life well lived, basically. And the music is just the byproduct.
Yeah.
You know?
But it's always been something that you've done then, right? I mean,
oh,
did you
yeah.
start playing music as a young kid?
Yeah, I started when I was 4 on piano, doing the piano lessons.
Okay.
But pretty quickly got sort of on the fast track to be groomed to be a concert pianist. And
really?
Yeah, and I just didn't really want to do that.
Was that the parents pushing you in that direction then?
I guess not pushing. I was pretty into it.
Yeah.
But I just sort of one day saw the future and I just didn't like it. It turns out I was right, because I hung out with a concert pianist about 10 years ago and grilled him on his lifestyle, and boy... Mm-hmm. It makes touring in a rock band look like a piece of cake. I'll tell you what.
How
I mean,
so?
Well, their schedules don't make any sense. They're
right,
like,
right.
Thursday, you're in Prague. Friday, you're in Los Angeles. Saturday, you're in Paris. You know, like, and you've got to rehearse for 10 minutes with each orchestra or setup.
Right, right.
And then play the piece. You know, it's just out of control.
Yeah. Do you still play piano?
Yeah, yeah. I play tons, yeah.
Nice.
I love it.
Nice.
I don't read music anymore. I just play by ear.
Right, right.
I like the ear thing.
Mm-hmm.
I could have gone to music school, I suppose, but I went to art school instead just to kind of, you know, goof around, have a rock band and make paintings and sculptures and stuff. And
yeah, yeah.
Hang out with my buddies. Again, a life well lived.
Yeah. right. You realize you're a pretty lucky guy to be able to do that, though, right?
Well, yes. I mean, turning a life well lived into a creative output
that
people want to be around, that's a lot of work, and that's a craft, and that takes dedication, and that takes whatever the Malcolm Gladwell, 10,000 hours, which Macklemore recently quoted.
Uh-huh.
The 10,000 hours I've definitely put in.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think you're there.
I think I've put in about 20,000, actually. So I'm double awesome.
So when did you first start picking up like guitars and stuff? Was that
school? Piano went along, and then I started, my dad had a nylon string guitar that my sister had in the 60s. I sort of picked that up, and that's when I figured out actual chords just by trial and error. I didn't have a book or anything.
And you had a little bit of background in like music theory and stuff. You knew how to read music, right?
No, I always hated music theory.
Yeah.
Even as a kid, I was like, I'll learn how to read sheet music, but I don't want to know how what the names of all these chords are and how they relate to each other.
A diminished seventh.
I didn't want to know that stuff. I didn't want to know the secrets because I felt like that's cheating.
Yeah.
Or that there would be, I don't know, not cheating, but I always felt like I could be more of an alchemist if I did not understand the tool.
See, that's the same outlook I had when I was learning how to play guitar in like middle school and high school. But I think it was more out of my own laziness because I knew that I wouldn't be able to pay attention to anything. You know, that this guy was trying to teach me.
Gotcha.
So, not so much for you, though.
No, it was more like, kind of lack of interest and also just this gut feeling that I could synthesize my own results more interestingly by trial and error than by sort of chemistry.
Right, you know? Yeah.
So I never wanted to know all the, like... if I'm playing this chord, then you know what would be the perfect next chord is this one. Because that seems like a path well-trodden, you know, and I wanted to always kind of come up with something new.
Yeah.
Synthesize something from my own, I don't know, particular brain space.
Right, right. And that kind of goes into playing playing a guitar with only two bass strings on
it,
right?
Yeah, that is great because you can really wear your influences on your sleeve.
Uh-huh.
Like, I'm going to play, I'm going to pretend I'm in Kiss. Now I'm going to pretend I'm in the Pixies. Now I'm going to pretend I'm in the Buzzcocks. Now I'm going to pretend I'm in the Sex Pistols. Now I'm going to pretend I'm John Lee Hooker. And I'm going to smash it all together, and it's going to sound like none of those because I'm playing a two-string guitar.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah. That's brilliant.
That's great, man.
Yeah.
And you kind of came up, I did a little bit of a loose research today on you. I read your Wikipedia page. That's about it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. My personal one or the president's one or the Casper one?
Your personal one, I think.
Oh, my personal one.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever read that.
It's pretty interesting.
Is it?
Yeah. It said you were hanging out with the dude from Morphine.
Oh, Mark.
And that's how you came up with the like two-string instruments.
Yes. He played. He passed away, unfortunately,
yes.
in 99.
Yeah.
He played a bass with two bass strings that were raised up. So
see, I never even knew. Oh, that's right. He played with a slide. Yeah,
and he tuned
his
to A E. So he was an A. And
okay.
But he had some variations lying around his studio. One was a guitar variation that was tuned more like in the C D range, and I just picked that thing up and went, oh yeah, this is it.
He kind of showed you that.
He just had it lying around. I just picked it up and went, oh, this is it. This is what I want to play. This is my instrument. Because it just gave me all this freedom. And it was minimal, and it was just, it sounded like nothing else, but it sounded like everything else. It was just, it sounded universal and simple, but just weird and unique. And just made me feel good.
Morphine was a great band as well.
Oh, yeah.
Were they around when you met him?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
They'd only made, I think they were making their second record when we started hanging out. And then I ended up living with him in Boston for a couple of years, and we had a band called Supergroup where we would make up songs in front of an audience, and they would give us titles, and we'd challenge each other with titles. And he played a thing called a tritar in that band, which is a super raised up three string. I was waiting for you to cough so you could edit.
Oh no, I was burping.
Oh, you were burping. Okay, add burp effect here. And that was fun. And we had a rotating drummer situation where all these different drummers would
come. Oh, really?
And great drummers. And, you know, Mark was my musical father, really. I mean, he really taught me how to let my freak flag fly. He was so, solid on stage. So in the moment and in command of his craft that I was free to just be this weird kind of goofy sprite that danced around him while he kind of held everything together.
Yeah, yeah.
And that allowed me to find this interior goofy guy that I wasn't allowing myself to have before that. I was writing kind of like relationship songs.
Yeah, and more serious stuff.
Yeah, I guess more serious, but kind of more conceptual. Like, I had all these, the song had to have a concept, like, I don't know. You know, it had to have something deep about it or something. I never allowed myself to write songs about animals and food and all the stuff that I would sing about when I was just sitting around improvising. And when Mark and I would sing together, I would sing about all this stuff. But I didn't really, I always thought of those songs as second class citizens. But then hanging out with him and having him be into what I was doing and feeling like he's this solid character who's allowing me to like dance around and be this ridiculous thing singing about monkeys.
Yeah.
Well, maybe I could sing about monkeys without him on the stage. So he kind of gave me permission to be this kind of character that that was in me already.
Did you guys ever record anything?
Oh,
or was it all
tons.
So
we recorded all the live shows.
Oh, okay.
And did some studio. We did stuff in his house with an 8-track cassette.
Okay. Yeah.
But I have tons of stuff. In fact, you know, presidents are kind of doing some writing some songs now and maybe thinking about recording some new stuff. So when we do that, I put thousands of tracks and little, you know, audio notes to myself and and just put it on random in the car and see what leaps out, and every once in a while I'll hear a Mark.
Oh, record. Really?
Yeah.
That's got to be kind of touching.
Yeah. It is. It's
right?
Great. At one point both of our backs were out, and so we were both in back braces lying on the ground of his studio, and we wrote a song called Back Brace. Give me the back brace. And we recorded the whole thing on our backs. Every once in a while that song pops up. I'm like, oh, I remember that.
Oh, man.
They're like audio snapshots.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that dude was great. I mean, just such a a powerful voice and powerful musician as
yeah.
well.
Yeah, yeah. And we just played with Dana, the sax player in Boston.
Oh, okay.
He sat in. We did what song did we? We did Good. Oh no, Buena. We did Buena.
Okay.
In
yeah.
Boston with Dana.
Buena, awesome.
Buena Dana. It was fun.
Yeah, that's cool, man. They were from Boston, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
And what brought you over there? What, were you going to school there?
Well,
or
I went to art school, SUNY Purchase.
Yeah.
State University of New York at Purchase.
Okay.
Great school, still is.
For music or for something else?
There's music there, but no, I went for visual art.
Okay.
I just melted metal and painted paintings and never really paid. I never chose a major or like a area of concentration.
Did you graduate?
Oh, I graduated on the honor roll, and I have no idea how. I mean, it was literally like the reverse. It was like a Animal House, except at the end, instead of
yeah.
driving the car into the grandstands, they all get straight A's. I don't know how I did it. I was sitting there at graduation, they're calling the honor roll, and I'm on it, and I'm just like, what? Okay.
You didn't even know.
I didn't even know.
Oh, man.
It was
That's
weird.
Great.
Yeah. So that was fun. And during that senior year of college, there was a teacher named Christopher Janney who did this like large-scale installation art. And he taught a class about, I think it was about public art. And the drummer in my band and I took that class, and he kind of did an open call to the class, like, anybody who wants to come to Boston to work for me, you've got a job. And so with no plan after college, my drummer and I took him up on it and
yeah.
moved, and bass player, actually. Three of us from the band all moved to Boston and kept the band going in a different form and worked for this artist.
Uh-huh,
and that was
uh-huh.
great. Went all over the world, Paris, Germany, you know.
Really?
All over the country, setting
wow.
up these sculptures. And that was cool and a really good experience about how to work in a group. Chris Janney taught me an amazing dynamic rule, which I use now with my kids all the time,
uh-huh.
which is that in any group setting, entropy goes down naturally. And so you have to constantly be like you're keeping a balloon with helium in it afloat.
You have
to do little things to keep the entropy up, you know, find ways to keep things running smoothly. If one of you fails, you all fail. So if you see something wrong, say something, tweak it, get it right.
Yeah.
And, you
know,
everybody keep the entropy, everybody keep that ball in the air. And it's really been useful in bands, and I'm telling my kids that for group living situations, you know.
Right.
Hey, do the dishes, you know. Just help out.
But put a positive spin on it.
Yeah,
bit,
yeah.
Right?
Not
yeah.
do the dishes, stupid.
Do the dishes, dummy.
Yeah. So anyway, that was a great experience, and that got me to Boston.
Wow.
And
yeah.
So Mark was the first voice I heard on the radio. I was driving along Storrow Drive, turned on the radio, and it was Treater Wright, which is his band before Morphine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I don't remember how I met him. And he couldn't remember either. We went over it one time before he passed away, and we had no idea how we met.
You guys pretty pretty close up until even the point that he went?
Yeah, we were. In fact, I'd been out the summer before to record a song for the Mod Squad movie soundtrack. With
oh,
him,
yeah.
Which was a great movie. Not.
No.
I mean, it was a great movie in that it was a series of scenes.
Right, yeah.
With people in it. In that way, it was a great
with
movie.
With some stars.
Yeah, there was sound and there was picture.
Yeah.
And there was a beginning and then it ended.
Yeah.
And it was a great movie.
It was edited by a professional editor.
There were edits. There were things where the scene would change.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So it was really good. There were interior shots and exterior shots. So that
at the time, were you pretty excited to be involved in that project?
Not really.
No.
No. In fact, it's funny. Mark called me. I was like, oh, I got to do this song for this movie. And I was like, well, you know what? I'm just going to come to Boston and we'll just make a song. So I just got on a plane and went to Boston and I hung out with him for like a week, 10 days, which was great because I hadn't seen him for a long time and we used to live together and it was really great little revisiting of that.
Yeah.
But during the process of recording that, we were both really not into it. And we were recording these stupid things that had no form and everything. And one time we were sitting there kind of quietly listening back to something and he stops the tape and we just literally sat there for like a minute in silence. And I was thinking in my mind, we're beeped, you know, we're effed here. We have nothing. And he just kind of looks up and looks at me and goes, we're effed. You know, we're stuck. Said exactly what I was thinking, you know. And it was one of those great moments where I was like, oh, you're my buddy. But we ended up coming up with something that's on the soundtrack.
Well, now I'm going to have to see that.
Yeah, it's called You're an Artist. And actually, he did a pretty good job. He took our jams and formed them into something.
Right on,
you know?
Right on. Excellent.
Something real.
Now, was he pretty messed up when you guys were hanging out, too? Didn't he die of an overdose?
No. He had a heart attack.
I'm thinking of somebody else.
He had a heart attack live on stage in Italy on July 3rd, 1999, I believe.
Holy smokes.
Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4. Dead.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It was intense.
Well, that's a little bit better than what I thought it was going
to. Kind of amazing for Mark to go that way. I mean, that was like, it's a very dramatic, storied. I mean, his narratives in his songs were always kind of like, you know, suspenseful and there's drama and there's intrigue and a lot of it's in the first person. So he casts himself a little bit in these songs and then he has this like dramatic exit to the world, which is just kind of amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sad that he had to go for sure, but, you know, that was pretty awesome way to go. I mean, not awesome, but you know,
for a musician, like
noteworthy doing exactly. Yeah. They say he went doing what he loved. So,
yeah, right.
You know, it's like the airline pilot that plows into the mountain. Well, he loved to fly.
Well, this is a perfect spot to go with our second musical break and a very apt song as well. More Bad Times.
Oh yeah, Boston. That was a Boston band.
There you go.
Yeah. I'll tell the story of the song after we hear it.
Yeah, let's do that. Okay. This is More Bad Times by the Presidents of the United States of America. And we'll be back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears with special guest this week, Chris Ballou. All right. Enjoy yourselves. We'll be back in a moment.
Rabies, you never gained weight. You never drank poison. You watched what you ate. You never came home with a terrible scar. You never so much as put a scratch on my car. You never got measles. You never got gout. You never got dizzy and you never fell out. You never suggested we all play charades. You never picked up any live hand grenades. You twisted your ankle. I carried you. You got a divorce. So I married you. You fell off a cliff, so I buried you. I wish there were more bad times to see you through. Wish there were more bad times. 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 Wish there were more. You never leaked oil, you never drank cleanser, and you never ate foil. You never got hurt by sticks and stones, you never choked on any big chicken bones. You never got mauled by a mad baboon, you never lost all the air in your balloon. You never got poked in the eye with a spork, you never got sick from all that leftover pork. You twisted your ankle, I carried you. You got a divorce, so I married you. So I buried you. I wish there were more bad times to see you through. Wish there were more bad times. So many things did go wrong, but the list is not long enough. Not enough bad things to fill up a song. Wish there were more bad times. Wish there were more bad times. Wish there were more bad times. There were more bad times. I'd rather gather your bones than mop up this mess. The scrub is all spotless, wreck our success. I was holding your hand when it fell on the floor. When you
left, it makes me kind of sad. I feel like, you know, once I see it, I feel it gets into my brain like, I could have done that. Like, that's totally a great idea. And then
the inevitability factor.
Right. Right. Yeah. Someday I would have come up with that same idea.
Sure.
Except someone beat me to it.
Yep. That's what I'm after in music too. Yep. Inevitability.
Like, so you said you were going to explain to us what the what More Bad Times was about.
Yes. Well, that song's originally a waltz number by a band called Ed's Redeeming Qualities. They were a band in Boston when I was living in Boston, and they were great, man. There was a ukulele, mm-hmm. a violin, and a can of rice. That
what?
Was their lineup. Yeah. It was amazing. And they had all these great little campfire-y sing-along dear little songs, and they had this song called Bad Times, and it was like, bom, ding, ding, I wish there were more bad times to see you through, like that kind of thing. And I love the song, and I've made a exercise over the years of sort of keeping the one great song by a band that I'd either seen or were friends of mine alive through covering it, you know, mm-hmm. just keeping it going. We're Not Going to Make It from our debut record is a cover of a song by a band called Tracy Lord's Ex-Lovers that I went to college with. And they disintegrated and fell apart, and nobody would otherwise know that song except we covered it and kept it alive. So this was another opportunity, except it was a waltz song, and I could never really get the waltz to work in a rock band. One day, making our last album, in preparation for it, Andrew and Jason were over at my house, and Andrew started playing this figure on the guitar, this like straight 4/4 thing, this and it just made me think of that song, and I started taking the lyrics from that song and putting it over that riff, and I had to like stagger the rhyme scheme and write new lyrics for the verse, and we ended up kind of reimagining the song from the ground up.
Now, did you contact the people in this band, the Can of Rice, and say, hey, we're doing this?
Yep. And we worked out a publishing scenario, you know, through through back and forth conversation, debate about it, you know.
Yeah.
What is the, where's the intellectual property of the song? Where's our contribution? Where's theirs? And we came up with a formula.
Uh-huh.
And it was a challenging thing, but it was really fun. And I'm super proud of that song.
Yeah.
I love
that song. That's a great song.
Oh,
it's a great song.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't really, it's Ed's Redeeming Qualities. Everybody go buy that. They had another great song called Lawn Dart. She was pegged in the head with a lawn dart.
I've heard that before.
Yeah.
I think I'm
pretty
sure I've heard that.
Dad didn't see her. That's the worst part. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I've totally, that sounds really familiar.
It's
cool.
They're
pretty
sure
I've heard that.
You can get their album still on the internet machine. So everybody
a computer.
Yeah, no. Not a computer, internet machine. I've got a Fisher.
You know, the box with the lights.
Yeah, I've got a Fisher Price at home. That's what I use.
Oh man. Well, that's really cool, man.
Fun.
I want to get back in, because you mentioned we kind of glossed over a big part of when the presidents became more of like this job for you,
right?
That you didn't want to be in,
right?
I want to kind of get into that before we start talking about how you got into Casper Baby Pants.
Sure.
But so at what point did that happen?
Boy, at what point did that happen? I think
I know
the beginning,
kind of a broad question.
The beginning part was like a big swooping bell curve upward momentum. Things
of excitement,
and
stress.
Oh my god, this is happening now! This is happening now! Our video's on MTV. Now we're like here. Now we're there. Now we're above that. Now we're being nominated for a Grammy. Now we're this.
Yeah.
Now we're touring. Now we're so everything was fresh and new. And I don't remember an event.
What was that? Like mid-90s. Late 90s?
That was mid-90s.
Yeah?
Yeah. Before the band formed, we did our first show with Jason in 93, in December of 93, mm-hmm. end of 93. And then in 94, we recorded a demo tape and sold it over the counter at the Comet where Jason worked as a bartender. And
oh,
we
really?
Sold it at shows and stuff, made a cassette.
Yeah.
And then I met Beck and went on tour with him for two tours in his first band after he got signed.
Oh, okay.
And so the Presidents went on hold for about four months or so there.
Wait, what were you playing with Beck?
I was a utility guy. I played bass, guitar, ran the sampler,
sang
percussion.
That was when, Loser was out or something
like
that?
Yeah, it was Mellow Gold, his first record. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's got to be kind of, man.
That was super fun because I got to sort of ride along shotgun with Beck as he navigated the transition from doing it for fun and being stupid to doing it for a job. And he was impressive. He all right, I'm not drinking, I'm not smoking. He'd be in the back of the van reading the People's History of the United States. He was absorbing the world, made a conscious decision to to dig in and participate in his life.
Right.
It was really
cool.
But he and I had long conversations about this transformation as, you know, I was the only band member not from LA, so I lived with them, and we did radio stuff together and drove all over LA talking about it all. So it was really cool because I got to kind of like witness it. And then Jason called one day. I was like, hey, you know what? You should probably come home because we're selling these tapes like crazy.
Really?
And we need to get back to playing gigs. And by that time, I'd kind of, you know, my sensibility and Beck's sensibility at the time did not match. At the time, he was kind of trying to be a little bit of a Sonic Youth Jr. kind
yes.
of angry.
Yeah.
He didn't like the loser thing. He wanted to deconstruct it by being kind of loud and distorted and feedbacky. Uh-huh, uh-huh. And I was way too happy-go-lucky for that.
And kind of avant-garde, too.
Yeah,
he kind of went into kind of an avant-garde kind of
Yeah, he's always
well.
Had he's always had a real rainbow sort of sounds in his paint mm-hmm. box or whatever. Everything
yeah,
from
yeah.
like just static distortion to, you know, a beautiful country song.
Right.
But
right.
He then 2 years later, of course, I see him live and his band is like, it's like a Vegas show. It's like a total
oh,
show.
Yeah. yeah.
And I was like, man, if I was in that band.
He's like the indie James Brown.
Yeah. If I was in yeah. that band, I would probably have thought twice about quitting to go back into the Presidents. Because that was great. So it's weird because, you know, the fact that we didn't share the same aesthetic about how a show should go. So I was like, all right, I'm going to go back and do my own thing.
Right.
And
right.
so that worked out
yeah.
pretty well.
Yeah.
So I went back and then, you know.
And then you start that climb.
You start that ramp, that ramp up. And I think it's sort of like at the end of the process of touring, you know what? I think it was Germany. I think Germany was where I really all of a sudden was like, I'm not in control. What's happening here? Why we're sort of being used. The record company kept sending us to Germany.
Uh-huh.
When we were blowing up in the United States, and we did a fair amount of touring in the United States, but we could have done more. They kept sending us to Europe, sending us to Germany, trying to break us in Germany, and it made no sense because they didn't want us in Germany, really. We kept
yeah.
playing the same 100-capacity club in Hamburg, you know, over and over and over.
Yeah.
And it wasn't working. But in the record company's eye, they were like, ooh, Germany, they buy records. They buy rock and roll. Actually,
uh-huh.
they buy rock. They don't buy rock and roll.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, yeah. They're more into the heavy metal.
Yeah, so
right?
oops on that.
Yeah.
But, and then one day I sat down the woman at Columbia who's in charge of that decision and said, why are you doing this to us? And she kind of confided in me. She's like, my directive is to break you in Germany, and if I don't do it, I'll lose my job. So that's when I was like, oh, man. This fear-based culture at this giant company has now become more important than what I talked about before, which is like living a good life and turning that into music. Like
yeah.
this, all of a sudden fear was ruling and that sort of became infectious. And I think, you know, you have
something.
So
that's basically the point where you figured out it was like this realization point, it sounds like, where you were like, oh, this, my art is now a business. Right.
Yeah. Well, that came even earlier because we had to do stuff like, you know, create a partnership and
we had
lawyers and we had to sign a record deal. And Dave was the one who kind of took all that on and read the books. And he was our like legal brain trust. At the time I was creative. Jason was late night PR and Dave was the business brain.
Gotcha.
When Dave left, Jason became the business brain and Andrew's late night PR now. So
uh-huh.
I'm still creative. But yeah, you know, I just remember that. I can't really remember a moment, but that always sticks out in my mind, that moment when I was having lunch with this woman and trying to figure out what the hell was going on.
Right.
That was a moment where I went, oh, we're not in control of this at all.
Uh-huh,
and
uh-huh.
we're being kind of used. And so my reaction was, let's be like the Sex Pistols and break up now. Just let's destroy this.
Well,
and,
were you, I mean, you must have been tied into some sort of contract, though, right?
Yeah, but you break up and the contract's gone. That's the beautiful thing.
What?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Really?
Easiest way out of a contract. In fact, flash forward to 1997, that's what we did.
Uh-huh.
I called the president of Columbia and said, hey, Donnie, we broke up. And he's like, okay, bye.
That's it?
No fight, no nothing.
What?
Well, because he knew he'd used us up.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
He'd gotten what he needed out of us. You know, we saved the bottom line in 94 and 95 or whatever. And, you know, so we've served our purpose.
Well, shit, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So was it, so like during this whole time from Germany up to 1999? 1997 when you guys broke up? Were people getting along in the band? Or yeah. Were you guys starting to fight
no,
a little
we
bit?
Were,
or?
We were getting along, and the shows had love in them and everything. Uh-huh. But I don't know. Like
the want and the drive
was
not there.
I was just disconnected from it. Yeah. I lost that daily experience of random freedom that I need to sort of fuel the song machine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I also was just responsible for all these people and the repetition of playing the songs over and over again, although not so much that. I love the songs. Uh-huh. I learned that from Beck. When Beck said he didn't like Loser, I was like, ding, 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 don't release songs you don't love.
Right,
that was my lesson there. So, but I don't know. Things just sort of mounted up. And this gut, mostly for me, it was just this voice in my guts saying, this isn't it. Mm-hmm. Against all logic, this isn't it.
Right, right, yeah.
So reconciling that was my big inner conflict that I unfortunately didn't voice or share with the other guys in the band, and then it just sort of burst forth in this I quit thing.
Right, right.
So I regret that. I would definitely manage that differently. I would have turned a breakup into a break. But it happened the way it happened.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes putting something...
Well, it eventually turned into just being a break.
Yeah, it was a five-year... It wasn't even a five-year break because we'd put out Freaked Out and Small in 2000 and we had a band with Sir Mix-a-Lot and...
Yeah, that's right. You were in Subset.
Subset, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it all... The universe unfolds as it should.
Yeah, yeah. Whatever. So I take it there was no real bad blood once you said I quit.
No.
Either. Yeah.
No. I think Jason and I have worked out the the broken trust issue that might have sprang from that announcement at that band meeting. I think Dave really got where I was coming from because he was also overwhelmed and like, this is not what we tried to create. This is out of control.
Yeah.
We tried to create a companion to our daily life, which is this rock band where we can like, hey, we're hanging out all day barbecuing. Hey, look, we got a show with the Crocodile. Let's go, everybody in the bus. Go downtown and then play and then wake up in your bed. But that went away. So anyway, Dave was more on board with me. Jason's more of a tour machine.
Right.
He's in the game and he loves the game and he loves to tour and he loves to be out there. And Andrew now is this kind of more the same way. He's like, you know, he'll say yes to any gig, anywhere. Uh-huh. Like, Andrew, we're playing on a helipad at 4 a.m. for $10. I'm there! You know? So, anyway, Jason and I have had really great... we figured it out.
Yeah,
I've been real straight with him about my perspective, and he gets it. And so we have... Yeah, we're more on the same page now.
Oh, good,
than we were before.
Yeah,
I didn't really know Jason that well back in the day. It's funny. He was more Dave's. Dave brought him into the band. And it's funny. At the end of the first...
Like even when you guys were playing?
Yeah, end of the first wave, I didn't ever really... It was all about music and all about doing the shows and touring. And Jason and I rarely really had like conversations now that I think about it.
Really?
Yeah, but we're better friends now. We're actual buddies.
Well, that's good.
So I like that.
Yeah. Now you actually have the barbecues together.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Sometimes. Not. We talk about it.
Yeah, yeah. We talk about doing a barbecue.
You should come over, man.
How come we don't hang out more often? Yeah, it's always that. Mm-hmm. So when did creating music for children come into the picture then?
Well, that sort of started, like the whole time I was in the Presidents, I was trying to create whatever this other music was supposed to be. And it was always kind of... small and acoustic, and I put together this little ramshackle drum kit that I stood up at, and I made all these recordings, but none of it really worked because it was really just President songs unplugged. The perspective of the songs wasn't focused. It was surreal and about animals and stuff, and I was like, well, this is just President's Junior. This isn't really what I was trying to do. But I put out a few records as the Giraffes, and I put out a bunch of records. I then Sir Mix-a-Lot got me into like Pro Tools and cutting and looping, and I did a couple records as by myself that were like kind of weird, pastiche-y, sort of kitschy electronic music. And then I did a band called The Feelings Hijackers with this guy, Mike Singleton, who Mix introduced me to, and MC, and that was great. But that still wasn't it, so I just kept dipping my toe in all these waters. And as I'm doing this on the side, I'm kind of making music that's quieter and quieter and more acoustic and more innocent. This is the thing. I started to lose the... edge or sass or innuendo or friction between innocence and sexuality that makes the presidents really work.
Right, right.
Started to kind of lose that more and more, but then I was like, well, who am I going to sing these songs for? And then I met my wife, Kate, my second wife, and her art just totally spoke to me. It was this like bright, innocent, folksy, had integrity, was well made, great colors, animals, nature.
Cartoon,
it's paper,
kind of cartoony,
it's paper.
Right?
Kind of, but it's paper. It's kind of more folky and
okay,
and kind of cartoony, kind of folky. Just all the adjectives I wanted the music to have.
Right,
right. So I started to make music that went with the art. Like, all right, well, I'm just going to make this music that's really innocent and folky and bright and has integrity and well made, well recorded.
Yeah.
And then when I listened back, I was like, oh, it's kids' music. Yes. And because it was so great, such a great realization, because it is just totally a different territory.
Right.
So it's not like President's Junior where like, well, why isn't this a president's song? These are just for very young kids, zero to six and their parents. And I love the very young. I'm really interested in not doing anything remotely cool, like no rocket ships, no, you know, fire engines. What do you want to be when you grow up? No kind of sci-fi.
The run-of-the-mill kind of kid music that, that like parents like you and I have had to listen to and just go,
I can't go down the what's wrong with kids music trail.
Right, right.
I decided
right.
at the very beginning when I got into this, I am never going to do the whole like, here's what's wrong with kids music, because that's a long, hateful conversation.
Right, right. Yeah.
So what's right with kids music is like Dan Zanes, Jan Zanes, who was in the Del Fuegos back in Boston town.
Okay.
Elizabeth Mitchell, Frances England, Charlie Hope, these kind of like people that quote folk influences. And the beautiful thing about this is I listen to like old prison songs, spiritual music, work songs, folk music, hillbilly music, even classical music from way back. So I'm gathering lots of influences from like 100 to 500 years ago.
Yeah.
Even medieval music. And then kind of mixing it in with my rock and roll and pop and more recent stuff, more recent kind of palette, and coming up with this alchemy that is my own.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's
yeah.
really satisfying. And that's another thing I was itching for. Like, all right, rock band's good, but where are my roots? Where's my connection? Where's my arc? Where's my lineage? Why am I not connected to history in any way with this music? It feels kind of like these shiny little trinkets that we're tossing off that don't have any balls or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
For lack of a better word. I mean, any historical balls. That's what you can title this podcast, Historical
that'll
Balls.
That'll be the name of the show.
And the name of the show, Historical Balls. So that was another great connection to make. Like, there's the history connection.
Yeah.
I can make that. And then there's the innocence connection. Okay, I got that. And there's the acoustic thing. And there's like, I can make my own records, which I always want to do. I always want to run my own label, have the albums all look the same, have them be a set, kind of like the way Sub Pop ran their thing, you know,
okay.
there's an identifiable look, like
totally.
Same font on
right.
every album.
Right.
That the Sub Pop thing was always super exciting to me, like you've got a you know, a brand of
their logo hasn't changed since they began.
Yeah. And so I wanted that and I did that. So it's just scratched every itch. And I do shows solo, which is great, cuz I'm totally you know, at the mercy of, like, I get to incorporate the whole Mark Sandman improvisational roots, which is like things could change. A kid could walk up and say something and it could change the song, or I can stop and start or react to what's in the room.
Yeah.
So there's that. It's just every aspect of my musical personality is served.
But were you ever worried how this would look?
No.
Like with your peers?
Oh, no, no, no.
No?
The moment I discovered it was one time I told the story about how I discovered it was kids' music, and the person I was talking to was like, "Were you bummed?" And I was like, "Oh my gosh, the opposite." So I was like, "Oh, this is my own territory." And this territory has nothing to do with the culture of cool or selling people on the idea that you're cool or you're worth paying attention to. I don't feel like I'm fighting for. I don't feel like I'm fighting for attention in a very crowded bandwidth of pop music.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like, in fact, I think the 0 to 6 kids that I'm serving are super underserved. Kids music is a lot of, you know, 6 to 12.
Right.
Or
right.
whatever, 5 to 9.
Yeah.
But the 0 to 6 years old are super underserved, especially with high quality stuff that has some integrity and the parents can listen to. That's the other thing. I'm really trying to serve the family. I'm trying
right,
to reduce
right.
stress for the family by giving the kids and the parents music that they can actually 100% really say, I like this. This
yeah,
is
yeah.
good.
Yeah.
Like, you know, a little 2-year-old and the mom can both go, this is a good song.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, oh my gosh, we're sharing the love of a good song.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's cool. Parents are stressed out. You know, they don't sleep, especially parents of really little kids. They don't sleep right. They don't eat right. They don't, you know, there's a lot of moments where they could lose their cool. And I'm trying to, like, be the musical sort of, you know, relief for moments when you feel like you're
yeah.
going to lose it. Just
you're the audio equivalent of getting a back massage.
Yeah. An ear massage. Yeah. So that's the other aspect of this thing that I love is it
yeah.
really has a very real purpose in the world.
Uh-huh.
And I get families. I make it for the car, basically. I think about a family in a car. They're stressed
oh, yeah.
out. What
yeah,
do they
totally.
Need? What's going to help them? And I use that image all the way down to how I sequence the record, how I mix the songs, how I record the guitars. I think about that family. And then I get people coming up to me at shows like, oh, we just drove from, you know, Idaho and listened to nothing but your music. Or we just drove the whole Eastern Seaboard and had just your music and we survived and thank you. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it's working.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
yeah.
so cool. Now with the
that's got to be a great feeling too.
Oh, it's
I mean,
just awesome.
Yeah.
It's just awesome.
Yeah.
And, you know, the presidents have a lot of that. A lot of those things happen in the presidents too. You know, we serve a purpose. We make
yeah.
people smile
yeah.
and make people happy. I just guess, you know, I had to really satisfy that voice that was saying, you know, there's this whole other experience that you are not at yet that you need to
yeah.
keep digging
yeah.
for.
Totally.
So if you're out there, people, and you have a gut feeling, even if it seems like it's a bad idea at the time or it's going to cause a great deal of upheaval,
yeah,
pay attention to it because you never know what's at the end of that little rainbow.
Wise words, man. Wise words. Well, I really appreciate you coming on the show. This has
sure.
been a lot of fun to get to meet you and talk with you here. What's coming up for Chris Ballou?
Yes. Well, let's see. The presidents are, what are we doing? Presidents, blah, blah, blah. We are, God, we're going somewhere. I think we're going somewhere. Where are we going? We're going somewhere. Oh, we're going to Europe.
Germany. We're going back to Germany.
Germany. Oh my God. No, wait a minute. That's not till. So the presidents play every President's Day weekend
okay.
at the Showbox.
Awesome.
And then after that, next year, we're going to Europe to
okay.
do some stuff.
Okay.
But in the meantime, this month, more immediately, Casper Baby Pants is playing at Teatro Zinzani every weekend day
yeah.
at 11 a.m. It's an amazing circus extravaganza music
that's
show.
That's a great
like,
place.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place.
Love that. I love that place.
There's like dancing bears and acrobats
mm-hmm.
and, oh God, a dragon, an elephant.
See, I didn't know until we were talking, I didn't know that they did children's things.
Well, they haven't until the last couple of years.
Really?
Recess Monkey and I'm in this collective called Kindependent with
yeah,
Recess
yeah.
Monkey,
yeah.
the Board of Education, Harmonica Pocket, Johnny Brigar, myself and the Nodits. And,
okay. Yeah.
We did a series at Teatro Zinzani for 2 years called Big Top Rock.
That's awesome.
And then that spawned a Rhesus Monkey show that was specifically made for them and
yeah.
a Casper Baby Pants show that's specifically made for me. That's its own run.
Okay.
So,
cool.
Yeah. So we're doing it this month, June. And go to my website, babypantsmusic.com. to the show's page for all the information. And then the president's website is presidentsrock.com. Make sure you go sign up for the mailing list because we are recording new material and we're re-releasing our albums on crazy colored vinyl. And
nice.
We're unearthing all this amazing live material. And
and are you guys doing this all by yourselves now? Is this
yeah,
like
yeah.
much less stress, still fun?
Yeah, yeah we just decide. It. We decide how we want to do it and when we
awesome,
want to do
man.
It. And,
awesome, man.
And so we're going to really keep our mailing list people in the loop more than anywhere else, like
cool.
more than Facebook or
cool.
anything. So sign up for the mailing list because that's how you'll know what's up.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Yeah.
And what do you do? Are you guys on Twitter?
Yeah, I'm sure we are.
Do you tweets?
I you know Jason Finn is our
resident.
Sort of, he's our
Twitter guy.
He's our drum manager at the moment. We have no. He's our manager and our drummer, so he's our drum manager. So he's in awesome. Charge of all that stuff.
Awesome.
But yes, I'm sure there's a Twitter. Go to presidentsrock.com and all
you'll find
everything
a,
branches
you'll find
out from
everything
there. You know, it just use it instead of Google. You know, just go there if you're looking.
Use the search engine on President's Rock.
Yeah. And then if it's not on there, it's probably not worth knowing. It's not really important.
I like that.
Yeah.
I'm going to start using that as my thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you can find us at air-raid.net and, of course, on Twitter at air-raid.net, Facebook, Instagram, all those great spots.
I love Instagram. So,
it's pretty cool, right?
Yeah, I just started like a month ago. It's great.
I'm gonna take a picture.
Yeah,
of
let's both take a picture of each other right
talking.
Now.
Let's see if we can.
We'll post
do
it
this.
Immediately. Let's see how I do that. Bam, go into camera. Ding dong. Oh, that's terrible light. I can't even see you.
Yeah, see, I'm probably a little washed out, right?
No, I got.
Well.
I think we should do a selfie of the both of us. Okay,
let's do that.
All right,
let's do that. Okay,
this is good radio.
Hey, thanks for listening, everybody. Next week, part two of our Sasquatch extravaganza with bands Rose Windows, Surfer Blood, Japan Droids, and comedian Mike Birbiglia.
Oh, the Birbigs.
The Birbigs.
I love.
With a special phone call from Pete Holmes, which still to this day is making me kind of depressed. So, listen in next week, will ya? All right. We're going to go out today with Casper Baby Pants song.
Oh.
What's the one that you just posted the video for? Let's do that one.
The Stump Hotel.
Let's do that. I listened to it this morning. I love it.
Thank you.
Yeah. This is The Stump Hotel by Casper Baby Pants, and we'll be back next week with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Have a good one, everybody. Rest little pest at the Stump Hotel. The French ladybug maid is named Mademoiselle. When you check out of the Stump Hotel, a bellboy bug brings your bags and bids you farewell. At the Stump Hotel, the woodwork tastes alright. Eat your way in from outside. Try the banana slug pie. All the fireflies turn out their belly lights and settle in for the night. The pupas and mites. When you check into the Stump Hotel, get a segmented bed and you'll sleep really well. Check into the Stump Hotel, get a segmented bed, and you'll sleep really well. They're all vacant at the Stump Hotel. Get a splintery room with a musty old smell. Rest little pest at the Stump Hotel. The French ladybug maid is named Mademoiselle. When you check out of the Stump Hotel, a bellboy bug brings your bags and bids you farewell. Farewell.